The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fast away, good afternoon. It's 7 minutes past 12 midday. Man in Line with you through till 1. 111 new cases were recorded yesterday. We now have 704 active cases on the island, 5 people in Nobles, nobody in ICU, 416 people waiting for the result of a test, and 81 people booked in for a PCR today. From the vaccination dashboard, 68,306 first doses have been administered, 64,827 second doses, 786 third doses have been administered, and 20,091 boosters have been administered, a grand total of 154,010, and the DHSC currently holding 11,701 shots of vaccine in stock at the moment. And talking of DHSC, the Minister is with us today, Laurie Hooper, MHK. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to see you today. I say every day the DHSC is holding those vaccine shots in stock. Is it the DHSC or Manx Care?
Manx Care does all the operational work for us now.
Okay, so, and that's the big split, obviously, DHSC and Manx Care. When you were offered the job, what did you think, Mr. Hooper?
I'm not sure I did, to be honest. I realised it would be a big challenge going into this. I knew that there'd been a lot of difficulties over the years, and how hard David worked as well when he was in this role. So I just thought, you know what, someone has to do the job, and I thought I'd be able to contribute, really. So crack on.
Getting to grips with the whole brief as well. Steep learning curve.
Yeah, it is a little bit. I mean, I've been quite lucky in some ways in the last few years. Being in a party, I had other people who could provide support in terms of the things I'm not an expert in. So obviously we had our previous party leader, Kate Beecroft. Kate Gustain was health minister for a short period, so she was very much our health spokesman. And it's been helpful, I think, over my first term to be able to separate out some of that stuff. So it wasn't perhaps as steep a learning curve as it might otherwise have been.
Okay. Now, if you want to speak to Mr. Hooper, call 661368. The texts and emails are coming in already. And here's one that came in at the start of this week from Terry, who just says, I wonder if you could answer this for me, my wife, or ask Mr. Hooper, why no booster jabs? Why don't booster jabs show up on your patient access under immunisation?
It's actually a really good question. So we had the NHS app has now gone live for us on the island. So there's been a lot of back and forth with the UK. A lot of hard work has gone into getting that up and running. That at the moment, those apps will just show the two standard immunisations. That's just the way that they record things at the moment. There is some work going on with the UK to see actually can we include those booster jabs as well on those apps. So at the moment, it's not needed for travel purposes. So it shouldn't be too much of an issue in terms of using that as a COVID pass app to get in and out of the UK or in and out of Europe. But I think at some point in the near future, it may very well become a requirement that the booster also is one of the things we need to tick off so that there's work ongoing to get that included on the app as well.
Okay, and one regarding, we had a query in yesterday about travel insurance regarding repatriation and the fact that on some policies you have to be in paid accommodation. Yeah. What's the department's view of that?
That's always been the case, actually. So it's one of the things that happens quite a lot is someone will run into something unexpected in the UK. They'll think they're covered by the repatriation and by the reciprocal health agreement. But there's some things that have never been covered by that. And repatriation is one of those things. So the advice has always been to people, if you're going to travel, obviously, get travel insurance. But importantly, make sure it is appropriate travel insurance because some of those terms and conditions can catch you out. So you can get policies in some cases where they will cover you. But for the most part, most policies will require that it's either you must have either taken a flight or you must have been in a certain number of nights paid accommodation, otherwise you won't be covered. So it's very important if you're going to buy travel insurance, don't just buy the first one that you find on the internet. Actually make sure it is going to be suitable for what you need it for going back and forth to the UK.
And what would you advise people to do in the terms of conditions? What would you advise them to look for?
Things like that. So the first thing to look for is where the journey starts. So to make sure that it treats travel to the UK as travel. Some policies might treat within the UK journeys as not being a holiday, essentially, and that kind of makes sense, but making sure that it will cover you if you're travelling from the Isle of Man to the UK, make sure that paid accommodation question has been answered as well. Actually, if I'm going to go stay with friends and family, does my policy cover me for that if something were to happen to me? So it's just some of those fine details, and really there are lots of insurance specialists and brokers on the island that can really provide some good advice and help on this.
And coincidentally, does that work the other way round for people on the Isle of Man getting repatriated to the UK?
Yeah, my understanding of the agreement is it is reciprocal. So basically, it's the same rules on both sides of the water.
Laurie Hooper, MHK, is with us, Minister for Health and Social Care. And Iris, good afternoon. You're live with Laurie Hooper.
Good afternoon. Hello, Mr. Hooper. What I'd like to ask is, how can you possibly stage the TT next year, considering the impact that it has on our hospital and other agencies? Now, we, the Manx public, have had to put up with a severe lack of services since COVID, no routine surgery, etc., etc. And Manx Care stated there's no routine surgery due to lack of anaesthetists in bed. So if you can supply all this next June, why not now?
That's a really, really good question, and it's something that I've already raised with the Enterprise Minister to talk about. Actually, we know how important the TT is, not just to the island's economy, but to a lot of businesses, a lot of people, and actually to a lot of the way we see ourselves and the way we interact internationally, but absolutely crucial to being able to run the TT. You're absolutely right, is making sure that if we do have an incident, if we do have a COVID spike, for example, that's another worry this time around. Is the hospital going to be able to deal with that without badly impacting on other services? So those conversations are already underway. We're already working on, well, actually, how might we do some of that stuff? And actually, one of the simple questions, for example, is where are we going to carry on doing our PCR testing? Because currently that's done up at the grandstand. We're probably going to have to move that to another location so the grandstand can be used for the TT. So there's all these very, very operational questions going on right now in terms of, okay, we've got a commitment to put the TT back on. That decision has been made to say if we can run it, we absolutely will. But we have to make sure that the hospital can address that. You're absolutely right.
What's your view, Iris?
I don't think it should go ahead at this moment in time. I mean, we've suffered this last 18 months because, I mean, I have a friend who's had her cataract operation cancelled 4 times. You know, we've had to put up with lack of services, lack of routine surgery, etc., etc. But suddenly they can do it for the TT. I know exactly what impact it has on the hospital. So how can they suddenly say that next June we can cope with 30,000, 40,000 people coming to the island and the accidents, etc., etc., that happens?
Yeah, again, it's a really good point, and I know a lot of people have been impacted by having to delay or cancel surgeries, especially over the last couple of months when the hospital has had to postpone the planned procedures. I'd like to try and reassure you and anyone listening that there's a lot of work going on at the moment with Manx Care to see actually how do we start bringing those waiting lists down. Are there things we can do to get some of those procedures rebooked either on island, or can we maybe buy in services from the UK and block book a big chunk of surgeries? Because as I think you probably agree with me on this, it's not acceptable that we have people waiting years and years and years to have surgeries.
And what about cataract surgery?
That's another really good example. The ones that I've been contacted a lot by are kind of hips and knee replacements, but also cataracts. I've had a few people reach out to me in respect to those in recent days. And I think it's the same issue, that if we can find a way of bringing those waiting lists down, we absolutely need to do that. It's something that's been ongoing for a while in terms of how do we build some resilience into the health service when we do have temporary spikes in demand, or we have issues like you've already referenced in terms of staffing. How do we make sure that that doesn't overload the hospital and make sure that we can keep providing planned care? It's a massive question. It's a massive problem.
So I
can just want to reassure you that we are working on this.
So, I mean, your view, Irene, is there shouldn't be a TT because of the impact on nobles?
I do. Yes, I do. I appreciate it's got big economic value to the island, and I appreciate all that. But, you know, we, the public, have had to put up with an awful lot this last 18 months through lack of services, etc., etc. I just don't understand how suddenly you can put it on. I really don't. And you know, empty the hospital out. The stated there's no anaesthetists, there's no beds, there's not enough beds. Where are you going to get these anaesthetists from? If you can get them in June, why can't you get them now?
Okay, all right. Thanks, Iris. Thanks for calling today. And that point's a very important one. You mentioned, Mr. Hooper, about the PCR testing. And obviously, if it's going to move from the grandstand, it has to be either in or outside the course as well, presumably. Choice has to be made, doesn't it?
I think I'd argue, Andy, that everywhere on the Isle of Man is either in or out of the course. but yes, you're right, actually. That's going to be an important question for where we move it to in terms of making sure it's accessible, if and when the TT goes ahead, when it does happen.
Yeah.
Are we going to be able to get to it? And that's definitely an important question.
So we can take it. There are lots of conversations going on about what would happen at Nobles and any trauma cases that
absolutely. I mean, Nobles, Manx Care and Nobles have got always got one eye on making sure that what they do, they can do safely. And that's one of the reasons that they took the decision to cancel the planned elective care, is because actually when you look down the barrel of that and say we've got a lot of other pressures, if we cannot run a service safely, we will not run that service.
I think that's
the bottom line, absolutely.
So can I ask if you've come to a conclusion on those conversations yet?
No, I mean, it is early days. I mean, we're talking about middle of next year, really, by the time we'll need to make some of these actual changes, and they'll need to be a lead in time, obviously. But what we're focused on right now within the health service really is the vaccine program and actually getting that massively stepped up in response to some of the changes we've just had across from the JCVI in the UK.
Okay, 17 minutes past 12, man in line with the minister today, Health and Social Care Minister Laurie Hooper, MHK. Juan, you're live with Laurie Hooper.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Laurie.
Good afternoon, Juan.
Congratulations on getting back in, and good luck with your new post. I'm sure you're going to need a lot of luck with this post.
I'll take all the help I can get.
The poison chalice has been handed to you. I'm going to touch on the COVID vaccine thing. That's a lot of what I've been talking about. Laurie, you're an accountant by trade, I believe, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Don't you think then that nothing adds up? Because from what I'm seeing now, and I'm looking at the threads that's going on social media, I'm looking at the responses to Manx Radio, you're losing the will of the people. And this is just not here, this is England, and you're following the English narrative. To me, it looks like every so often you get that little phone call from England and you have to react to it. Now, most of the time, you've done quite well for the Isle of Man. We've done well, common sense has prevailed. Few times you've faltered, and right at the start you faltered big time. But generally you've not done too bad. But you seem to get that little phone call of Project Fear, and that seems to ramp things up. I mean, I'm looking at figures. We've got 1 in 5 children at the moment got mental health issues, 43% increase in ADHD, 37% increase in teenage depression, 200% increase in suicides, 10 to 14s. This is the kind of stuff that we should be looking at rather than trying to sell me a vaccine which I feel I don't need and I feel that I don't want. And I feel that the narrative that we're getting from this government now and following from the UK government is a sales pitch.
That's definitely a perspective. I mean, in terms of the vaccine rollout, we are sort of obliged to follow the JCVI guidance because they're the experts. They know what they're doing. They're the ones that recommend at which point it becomes clinically appropriate for a particular group to have the vaccine versus not having the vaccine, which is why when they made that big announcement earlier this week, we followed suit very, very quickly off the back of that. But ultimately, taking the vaccine is absolutely your choice. We're not mandating it. It's not compulsory. It is in some parts of Europe now, we're starting to see. But on the Isle of Man, at least, we're maintaining the line that it is up to you whether you have that. We're trying to inform people about the risks of not having the vaccine and actually the challenges that might present, not just to you and your lifestyle, but actually towards our health service as well in terms of protecting that capacity in the hospital that we've just been talking about. And really, it is the considered view, not just of the Isle of Man and the Isle of Man government, but of the scientific community, really, that the booster and the vaccine is the primary method by which we're going to get ourselves back out of the COVID situation. It's going to be around for a while. We've seen all the stuff in the newspapers about new variants coming out. That's going to keep happening. And the reality is, as well as all the other mitigations, I mean, I'm sat here now with Andy with a plastic screen in between us, as well as these kind of standard mitigations that I think are going to become more and more normal. The vaccine is by far and away the one biggest thing we can all do to make sure that we're not just protecting ourselves and our own health, but each other and the capacity of our health service.
And where do you stand, Juan will be back in a minute, but where do you stand on the civil liberties of all this? Because to paraphrase Juan, lots of people are concerned that our civil liberties are being encroached upon using COVID as, if you like, a shield.
So my understanding of the situation we're in, at least on the island, is everything we're doing has an end date. So the regulations themselves, for example, the public health regulations at the moment, have an end date of the end of the year. They're just about to be extended to the end of March. I suppose technically they have been, but it'll be the end of March is the next end date. And actually there is a two-mold parliamentary process around that that ensures that government can't overreach itself in terms of what it is doing, because ultimately two-mold, who are accountable back to the people, are the ones making that final call. And so to my mind, I think it's a balance between what is a necessary restriction and what is unnecessary, what is disproportionate. And so you've seen the government response to the Omicron variant that's come out of the southern parts of Africa. Our response has been different to the UK. We haven't gone as far as mandating face masks in some places, whereas the UK have. There are some parts of the UK that are requiring you to have the COVID passport to get in and out of certain functions. You know, they're doing that in various parts of Europe as well. We, again, haven't gone down that road. And it is all about trying to do what is proportionate for the risk that is presented to the island, not necessarily the risk that's presented to other parts of the world. You know, they're in a different place than we are. We're very far progressed with our vaccination program, and that is the one thing really that is helping us keep some of these other mitigations that we're seeing become mandatory in other parts of the world, is helping us keep those at bay.
Okay, final word, Juan.
Yes, I know you're going to cut me off, Andy. I've got loads of stuff that I could talk about. Yes, I agree that there is end dates to stuff. That's why Parliament opens every year and reintroduces all its statutes, because there is end dates. I'm looking at an article by Dr. Angelique Coetzee, who's the person, the doctor in South Africa, who actually founded this Omicron variant, who said it's been there for quite some time and is very, very surprised at the response of the Western world at what was happened. If you read her article, okay. It's there, and it's about, and you can read it. Two questions I want to ask you before you cut me off.
Very quickly, because Samantha's waiting to come on now.
I'm sure she is. Double vax people, if they do not take the booster, do they then legally, under legal terms, then become unvaxxed at some period?
Okay, and the second question?
Your second question is a question that I've asked before. Why is government not giving any information out for the uptake of vitamins when you come onto the COVID 111 line or anything else? You go to the grandstand and you get told to go home, take water and an aspirin. In this year, world pandemic, supposed to be killing loads of people. Why have you not promoted the use of vitamins?
Okay, Laurie.
So in answer, I'll take your second question first about vitamins. The reality is that the scientific evidence just isn't there. I mean, if the evidence was there to back up that this was an effective treatment, we'd be shouting it from the rooftops. You know, if there was something simple and cheap we could do that was effective, that had been demonstrated across the field as being effective, we would absolutely be doing it. The reality is the evidence isn't there to support some of that position. In terms of the double vaccinated question, presently, to be treated as fully vaccinated, you need to have had the first and second primary doses. Like I said earlier, some parts of Europe are now starting to change that approach and are requiring that to be classed as fully vaccinated, you must also have the boosters. We're not there yet on the Isle of Man. The UK aren't there yet, but we can't really say where the world is going to go. And so those changes, we are starting to see them in other parts of Europe, unfortunately.
Okay. Samantha, you're live with Laurie Hooper.
Ah, hello, Mr. Hooper. I'm just wondering why, with all the COVID rates going up now, why haven't we re-implemented social distancing? And also, why are we still allowing huge gatherings like the Christmas lights switching on in Douglas last week? Because since then, if you look at the COVID figures, they've shot upwards. People were shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, it's a good question. Again, this comes back to, I think, being a proportionate response to the risk that we're seeing. So the main thing we're trying to do at the moment is protect the capacity of the health service. So this comes back to that civil liberties question. Do we want to be restricting people from doing things when actually people can make their own choices as to whether they want to go to these events? Ultimately, if people have had the vaccine, if they're doing lateral flow tests twice a week, which is what we're advising, government are also advising that before you go to a big event, think about doing a lateral flow test. You know, if you're going to be in an indoor space, wear a mask. These things are all things people can do, really, and should be doing by themselves. We don't need to dictate, I think, to the Manx public how to be responsible individuals. I think generally we all are pretty responsible on the island. Some of these extra restrictions that we're bringing in now are precautionary in response to the fact that we've seen this new Omicron variant pop up. And what we're trying to do is delay, essentially delay the inevitable. It will eventually make its way to the island. That's the way these things work. When it does get here...
So it's when, not if.
It is a when. That's the reality of these variants. It will eventually arrive. And when it does, we need to make sure that it spreads as slowly as possible. And that's why some of the restrictions are in now, because it's quite likely it will arrive and start spreading before it's been identified as such. I think if we then start to see a much larger spike in cases that does risk putting pressure on the health service, that's the point where the winter framework that's been published says we will start to take further actions in terms of social distancing and gathering. But at the moment, the measures that government are recommending around regular lateral flow testings and mask wearing, they're considered to be adequate defence or an appropriate response.
What's your view, Samantha?
Well, protecting the health service isn't really... It's not... I mean... There's people going into hospital virtually every few days, if you look at the statistics. And if you look at the statistics and the scientific information also, it suggests that Omicron is more transmissible than Delta, and the symptoms are very different to Delta. To reference the BBC and the Liverpool Echo newspapers yesterday. And it's similar to the common cold. So how are you going to know if you've got COVID or not, apart from doing an LFT?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's by doing the LFTs. This is why government is making them freely available. It's why you can get them delivered to your house. It's why we're advising people to do them a couple of times a week, because you're absolutely right. I mean, from the start of COVID, one of the most dangerous things about it has been that it can spread before you start having symptoms. And so we know that the only real way of picking it up is through regular self-testing. And this is why government's advising that people do this, because then if you are taking tests a couple of times a week, you will identify the fact that you've tested positive on that, and you can go and get a PCR test much earlier than if you wait till you have symptoms. And so you're absolutely right. The symptoms may very well be different. And I said the same thing to Tim Glover the other day when he was talking about, can we extend the symptoms list? And I said to Tim, well, actually, Tim, you picked it up from a lateral flow test. It doesn't matter what symptoms you've got. If you're doing your lateral flows twice a week, if you do your lateral flow before you go to a big event, you should pick up the case well before your symptoms kick in.
Have we got enough lateral flow tests?
Absolutely. We are still ordering them by the bucket load. That's not a technical term, but we are ordering lots and lots of them. And we are making sure that we have enough supplies in case there's any disruptions to things like sailings. So, yeah, we're absolutely committed. If we're asking people to take these tests, it would be incumbent on us, I think, to make sure they're available.
Okay. Thanks, Samantha.
You.
Okay, thanks for being with us. So just to put it on the record then, I mean, everybody is going to Alan Carr on... to see Alan Carr at the... Everybody should be taking a test before they go to a big event like that.
That's the advice, is to say to people, actually, if you are going to be going to these events, which we'd encourage you to still do, make sure you do a lateral flow test before you go. If you're going to be in an indoor space, think about wearing a mask while you're in there. It's expected now, is the standard language we're using. It's expected to wear a mask if you're going to be in indoor spaces, especially crowded indoor spaces. But it is about protecting yourselves and protecting others. So if you know that everyone in the room that you've been in, if they're all taking lateral flow tests, it should help give us a bit more confidence to go about our lives as normally as possible.
Okay, and that's the nub, really, that everybody should be doing this. Steve's with us. Steve, you're live with Laurie Hooper.
Hi, Laurie. How are you doing? You okay?
Hi, Steve.
Hey, boy. I could sit with you in a room and the government officials and thrash over the table all day long, but I'll fast forward. I've got two very important issues to bring up, so here we go, very fast. Hospital. You got a doctor's, got something wrong with you. They say, don't go to hospital because it's full. They won't see you. You don't feel well. Call an ambulance. They'll come to your home. They'll treat you at your home and they'll leave you there. They won't take you to hospital because hospital's full. If hospital's full, then why you run TT? Because it's full, and it's full, yet you've only got five in with COVID. So I take it it's full of just normal sick people. If that's the case, it remains the fact that hospital is full. Even when you go in there and corridors look empty. So very fast forward, I'll let you go over this. But my point is, you get told hospital's full, and yet on the news, there's only five in with COVID, and yet, you know, we're already stretching ourselves, cancelling things, but we are still classed as full. So you've got to work out then why you're going to run TT. Next point I'll ring up with you, everything very important. You get an email from school, your child's been in close proximity with someone who's had to be sent home with COVID. Right. Why don't the school contact you and say, come and get your child out of school because they've been in close proximity with someone who's tested positive to COVID. Take the child home for 5 days, do some tests. If they don't develop COVID, then put them in school. No, leave them in school. If they do bring the symptoms and start developing COVID, then you remove the child. It's too late. Then someone else be near your child with COVID, and then that parent gets sick. So many flaws are in your government. Honestly, so many things that you do as government official representing me and everybody else is flawed. And I know you do your best and you say, yeah, point taken. But that's just, say, that's just your voice. Every time someone else takes over the role, it's just following the same suit before. Nothing ever happens. Stress your voice, put your foot down and stand your ground. And don't be run over by your colleagues. We are stretched as a health service. We can't afford the TT to go ahead. You know, that's my view.
So I'm not just going to nod my head and smile here. I'm going to disagree with you on both those points. The first one, the hospital isn't full. That's not the message that we're trying to send out to people. It's a two-part message. The first part is actually the emergency department was very busy. It was the ED admissions, the A&E that was getting full, and that was just people generally getting ill for all sorts of reasons. And so the advice was, in terms of A&E, actually think about where you could go instead. So the MIU in Ramsey deals with a lot of issues. That you've got the minor ailment scheme that you can do through your community pharmacies, maybe the GP. There's lots of other avenues you can go to get treatment. You don't have to default down to A&E. That was the advice. If you do need to be admitted, you will still be admitted to hospital. That is absolutely always going to be the case. But the ask from the health service was, actually, just think before you just turn up at A&E with the issue that you've got, could you go to one of the other providers? So the hospital isn't full. It is very busy. That is absolutely true. And that your point you make about there's not a lot of people in there with COVID, again, absolutely valid. It is demand led, and it is the normal kind of demand you see around this time of year anyway, just a lot more than we used to, a lot more than we normally see. And that could very well be due to lockdowns and people not mixing as much over the last winter. In terms of the school, one of the things that the schools are asking people to do, like you say, they're advising you if your child has been a close contact, and the government advice for all close contacts is to take daily lateral flow tests. And so it comes back to that self-testing. We'd ask you, actually, if you've got a child that's been identified as a close contact, as a parent, we would advise you to say, look, maybe do a daily lateral flow test so you're not putting them back in that environment without knowing that they are themselves not positive, so you don't end up in that perpetual spreading situation. And that if you can, if you're doing those tests, you should identify that your child is positive before they start showing symptoms and before they start becoming potentially able to spread COVID to everybody else. So I completely acknowledge what you say, that there are lots of complexities really around some of this stuff, and the advice that goes out isn't going to be suitable for everyone, and not everyone's necessarily going to follow it. But we are asking people to do these steps, to be quite take responsibility themselves, rather than government have to mandate some of these things.
Steve?
Yeah, you okay? Yeah, I appreciate your responses there. It's just a case of when you do go to a GP and they are, how they turn around. I know terminology can get turned around, but the words they use are hospital's full. That's what they turn around and tell you as a GP. Your hospital is full. And it's just a case of you think, well, what's going on? You know, especially the way the COVID is in the island, you know, it's just crazy at the moment. There's so much needs looking at from a different angle. And I think the only ones that can do it is yourselves, really. We can't do it. You know, things need to be addressed.
Okay.
More.
All right. We appreciate your call, Steve. And thanks for raising those points. We're live with Laurie Hooper from the Department of Health and Social Care. The minister is on Man in Line, and it's 25-1.
If your hearing isn't as good as it used to be, contact Island Hearing. Run by a local family for 12 years, you'll find excellent treatment, help and advice at Island Hearing. Offering professional hearing tests, the latest hearing aids and competitive prices from our branches in Douglas, Ramsey and our main hearing clinic in Port Erin, where we also provide the most advanced wax removal treatment on the island. Call the Island Hearing team on 830 722. Island Hearing, we're listening.
When you choose a van, you want maximum efficiency, maximum economy, maximum value. So you need Maxus, 100% electric with up to 200 miles range and 8 years battery warranty, plus plenty of sizes and power options. Test drive one for yourself at Outdoor Power and Plant, Snugborough Industrial Estate, and see why the largest UK companies have all chosen Maxus. Call 611 341 now. Maxus, giving you the max.
Been bottling up the need for a great party. Not long till Christmas, but why wait to celebrate? The season for good times is officially underway, so get down to Wine Right, Party Central. loads of big beer deals, 25% off selected wine, with champagne too. Our biggest and best ever offers. Everything on your party shopping list in one spacious, easy parking place. Wine Right. So please remember, a party isn't just for Christmas.
Office World at Spring Valley is the island's largest one-stop shop for packaging materials. We stock everything from huge rolls of bubble wrap to single envelopes, padded bags, mailing tubes, labels, packaging tape, storage boxes, and much more. Office World has everything you need to package your goods safely and securely. Office World is also home to the island's largest stationery store, with over 4,000 products under one roof, with free parking right outside the front door. It has to be Office World at Spring Valley Estate, Braddon.
Climb aboard the time train every Saturday morning for cool caftan music, 60s chick hits and top pops. You'll find everything on board to enjoy 2 hours of fingerstabber toe-tap in rock and roll music from the 1960s. Plus, there's a competition every week with Isle of Man Railways where you can win fab and groovy prizes.
Loving it, mate.
So make sure you join me, Chris Williams, and the time train crew Saturdays from 8:30.
All courtesy of the Isle of Man Railways time train.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Laurie Hooper, MHK, Minister for Health and Social Security, 23 minutes to one. Good afternoon, Stephen. You're live with Laurie Hooper.
Oh, good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Minister. And good afternoon, listeners. I'd like to ask, Laurie, if I can, it would appear that you have inherited a mess, to be honest. And I think this is some of the reasons why there was a big change in the last general election. And it would appear that the last house, the last Comyn, hasn't addressed some of the problems within healthcare that you've now got to deal with. And I do think that you're more than capable of dealing with it. Now, I know you spoke before, you had a caller speak about an anaesthesiologist. And I know that we've tried to create Manx Care in order to give arm's length separation of policy and procedures and carrying out the duties of the medics, etc. But there is problems within the hospital, and they appear to be the lack of staff generally in all disciplines. We've all had experiences of family members being told this. What I'd like to ask you, and I think you're the man for the job, Laurie, I know that we've clashed before, but you're the man for the job. And what I'd like to ask is, will you be able to use your ministerial authority to A, ask for more money of the Treasury, if it turns out that you need that money in order to stop us using locums and employ people for long-term contracts? So will you do it? How long would you give them to have a lack of anaesthesia, just for one example, before you use your ministerial authority to say, we've got to resolve these problems?
So in answer to your first question, Stephen, in terms of more money, the answer is yes, absolutely. We have already asked Treasury for more money as part of the standard budget process. If you look back at the independent review that was done by Sir Jonathan Michael, there's actually a funding model built into that review. So there's a lot of graphs and tables in there, but it essentially talks about the health service needing an above inflation budget growth in order to deal with what they refer to as demographic pressures, so that's the aging population, and non-demographic pressures, as well as increase generally in medical costs around things like drugs and staffing and medical procedures. And that projection is set out all the way to kind of 2035-ish, and that's what we're using as a baseline to go to Treasury and say we need to make sure that we're funding this. And again, Tim Wald was committed to implementing those recommendations from that report, so I'm working on the assumption that Tim Wald is committed also to following up the funding assumptions and the funding recommendations that were built into that. So please be reassured that we are absolutely fighting for that budget to make sure it is sort of baked in. One of the plans I have, which again comes from that report, is to put health on a multi-year budget, so rather than having to go back every single year and asking for funding, we should be in a position where we can ask for a 3 or a 5 year plan and say this is what we'd like to do over the next few years. Gives us a bit more certainty. in terms of recruitment, it is a challenge. It has been for a long time. It's not a new issue. It's been exacerbated by things like COVID, but actually the shortage of anaesthetists we have at the moment, for example, isn't anything new. We have been running under capacity for a long time. The question, can you put an end date on that and tell Manx Care if you don't have a full staff capacity by a certain date? I'm not sure that's realistic, because you can't force people to move here. You can't force people to relocate. You can try different methods, I think, to recruit people, different incentives to try and attract people to the island. And a lot of those conversations are happening right now in terms of, actually, do we need to think outside the box in how we recruit people?
Is there a shortage in the Western world of anaesthetists?
I think there is, and I think that's the problem, really. It's medical staff are in very high demand all over the place, not just in the British Isles. And so we are reaching further and further and further afield, I think, to make sure that our net is cast as widely as possible. And we're working with the Locate team inside DfE as well. You may have seen the courier wrap that was done recently in terms of promoting the healthcare working in the health and social care services on the island. And what I found from my last 4 or 5 years in the Department of Enterprise is actually selling the island isn't that hard. It is a great place to live. It's a great place to work. And most people actually look at us with a bit of envy. So the idea that you could come and live here and work here is quite an attractive proposition.
What they call it in business, the churn rate? How many people come and leave? Do you know what the percentage is?
That is a very good question. I don't know that, if I'm honest. But we will have the census information coming out very shortly from the census that was done last year. I think that's probably due out early next year, kind of first quarter. So that will give us, I think, some really good information on that churn rate, on what is our population looking like in terms of growth of working people, growth of economically active people. So there's a lot we can do, I think, to encourage people to stay here after they're attracted by the glossy brochures and the front page that we have that actually does sell the island pretty well. It's then encouraging people to stay, to buy a home here, to raise their family here. That's then the next challenge. But it is a massive piece of work that's ongoing, and let's not underestimate the scale of the challenge that's being faced, you know, by healthcare services across the British Isles trying to recruit staff.
Okay, thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for being with us. I want to go to his Bill now on Man in Line. Bill, you're live with Laurie Hooper.
Hi there, Andy. Hi, Laurie.
Hi, Bill.
Just a couple of things. I mean, I just can't believe we're in this situation now. It's looking at it all from the South African doctor and his reports and everything, it's a very mild form of COVID, they pretty much think. Yes, it could be a super spreader. Also looked at, so we say it could be a blessing in disguise, because everybody will get it and then be left with antibodies which will fight another wave or whatever. But what concerns me the most is the damage that these reactions do to the economy and to people's lives. Like for me, it's ruined this Christmas now, totally ruined it. But I've got two shows to go and see. Am I going to sit there in a mask and watch it? No, I'm not going to do it. Do I want to go shopping in a mask? No, I don't want to go shopping in a mask. You know, I'm double jabbed, I'm boosted, etc., etc., etc. Majority of the islanders, it's got to be way into the 90% mark, are double jabbed. And if you don't want to go to a big gathering, don't go. If you don't want to go to a pub, don't go. If you don't want to go to a show, don't go. You don't have to. So that kind of thing bothers me, and it's really affecting me. It must be affecting a lot of other people. I just wish they would just let us make our decisions ourselves. If you want to wear a mask, if you want a social distance, if you want to isolate, do it. But don't be forced to do it. And as I say, if somebody wears a mask, I don't care, I don't mind. But you seem to get these people come on, they want to cancel TT, they want to cancel Grand Prix, they want to cancel everybody going out. We can't go on through life year after year. This is 2 years now. Christmas has been ruined. For what? For what?
So the position you've outlined there, where a lot of this is actually we're letting people make their own decisions, that's where we've landed, if I'm honest. So government would say that actually going to these events is safe. Do a test before you go, wear a mask when you're there, and actually that's how you mitigate the risk that would present by going to the events. But just to pick you up on one thing, the doctor in South Africa that identified the virus in this variant in the first place was talking a bit about the cases they'd seen. If you read a bit further on in some of the articles, so there's one here from The Telegraph that quotes one of the things that they said, was that she said her patients were all healthy, and she was worried the new variant could still hit older people with comorbidities such as diabetes much harder. And she'd said, what we have to worry about now is when older or unvaccinated people are infected with the new variant. If they're not vaccinated, we're going to see many people with a severe form of the disease. And it's very, very important to bear that in mind. In South Africa, only about 6% of the population are over the age of 65. That compares to the Isle of Man, where it's almost one in three. And so we're looking totally different.
There's a big word there, though, it could. A big word there. Could.
Oh, absolutely. It is a could, and that's why these measures the government are putting in are precautionary, because we just don't know. And what we don't want to do is expose the island and the population over here to something that could be quite damaging. We should know more in a few weeks, and if the answer comes back in a few weeks that actually this is mild across the board, you're right, this could be a blessing in disguise. But if that isn't the case, then that could prove a real problem to us. In terms of people being double jabbed, the evidence is that it's absolutely vital, but that immunity does start to wane after about 6 months. That's what the evidence shows so far. Mm. And without the boosters, your immunity drops down and the numbers could have been the 60%. You get the booster again, you're back up in the 90% protection range. So you're absolutely right. We don't want to be mandating these things.
I'm totally fine with all that. What is really getting to me the most is that people are telling us you have to, like, I went to a shop this morning, both shops had on the door, you can't come in without a mask. You can't come in without a mask, whether you want to or not. So you're literally being dictated to whether I can or whether I can't go into a shop. Now, I'd wear a mask out of being polite. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is the taking away that little bit of your liberty each time, and that's the way to do it. But anyway, we've done the mask. The other quick bit I just want to say is 22 people committed suicide on the Isle of Man just last year. So over the pandemic, that's just last year, not the year before of the pandemic. So that's nearly one person every 2 weeks taking their life. I mean, you know, mental health on this island is, and again, they're trashing the economy, they're trashing everything with these mitigations and closing down restrictions, SD, blah, blah, blah. This is the effect. 22. If you said 42 people killed themselves on this island over the pandemic period so far, that almost equals the people that died of COVID, who, well, allegedly died of COVID. They could have died of anything, but they had COVID at the same time. Now, is the health department looking at this mental health issue? Because that is massive in my mind.
Yeah, so it's a very good point. So the information, you're right, it was 22 people in 2020. It was only six in 2019. So over the 2 years, over the course of the pandemic, it isn't even close to the number of people that have unfortunately passed away from COVID. But you are absolutely right that this is not something we should learn to live with. This is not something we need to take lying down. It is an absolute challenge. It is a focus, I think, for the health service to make sure that we can improve the mental health support services that we have. I talked extensively in the House of Keys on Tuesday about some of the work that's going on to help tackle loneliness and isolation, and building some of that community support that really we all know is so vital to helping people deal with some issues around suicide. Suicide itself is often described as a sort of a pandemic. It comes in clusters. It does affect people. It affects families. It affects friends. It affects everybody. And so I completely agree with you. It is something we need to tackle. We need to figure out actually what are some of the underlying causes of it. Is it connected to some of the restrictions around the pandemic? And how do we really help people make different choices? How do we help people feel that actually that isn't the only route for them and there are other ways of getting out of whatever difficulties they may be in?
Okay. All right. Bill, thanks for calling today.
Thanks very much.
All right, I appreciate it. It's 11 minutes before one. Just before we go to a break, Mr. Hooper, could you clear up what's the difference? Lots of people are asking this. What's the difference between the third dose and the booster?
Okay, so the third dose is for people that are, the language is severely immunocompromised. So if you were in the midst of particular types of treatment, for example, when you had your first or second dose and that would have compromised your immune system, then you need a third dose to get the same level of protection that normally you would have got from the first two. So those people will then also get a booster 6 months later, because the booster is designed to replenish some of that waning immunity. So there was a small cohort of people, I think it was 700 or so that have been done so far, and this probably is about everybody if I'm honest, there's a small cohort of people who will need that third dose and a subsequent booster. For the rest of us, it will just be a booster. It's also slight differences in the vaccine that's on offer, so all the boosters themselves are the mRNA vaccines, the Pfizer or the Moderna, because they're the ones that have been shown to provide them the best extra protection as a result of a booster.
Okay, Laurie Hooper with us. Just got a few minutes left on Man in Line.
Calling all grown-ups. We need you to be a foster carer. Right now, there are young superheroes like me across the island who are looking for super carers. Anyone can wear a cape and run around stopping bad guys, but being someone who helps a young person grow, being someone who inspires, that's a real superhero. To find out more about the Mockingbird Family Model Pilot and the Family Placement Service, call 61000.
Great Scott! If my calculations are correct, the countdown to Christmas is on! With so many great shows in 2022, a Villa Gaiety gift card is the perfect escape to the future! So this year, give someone the gift of entertainment, redeemable for any ticketed event to the Villa Marina or Gaiety Theatre. Get Christmas all wrapped up at VillaGaiety.com or call 600-555. Villa Gaiety gift cards, because where we're going, we don't need roads, but you'll need tickets.
Are you winter ready? Don't leave your heating oil order till it's too late. Call Ellen Vannon Fuels on 844-000 and our friendly team will do the rest. 844-000. Winter's sorted with Ellen Vannon Fuels.
Late opening on Tuesday and Wednesdays till 8pm, a Christmas market each weekend, and Santa's Grotto from 12 to 5 means that at Tynwald Mills, you can take the stress out of Christmas shopping. So, everyone's happy.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Department of Health and Social Care Minister, the Minister for Health and Social Care, Laurie Hooper's with us. And Julian, you're live with Laurie Hooper.
Hi Andy, and hi Laurie. My understanding is that people working in the care sector in the NHS, the nobles, etc., and care homes, there's some consideration going on at the moment about mandating vaccines for them. And of course, as we've seen in other countries in Europe especially, that sort of seeped into, like, everybody is going to have a vaccine at some point. But there are a few safeguards in place. So, for example, the Isle of Man is part of UNESCO, as everyone knows, but part of that arm is the Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights of 2005. And particularly Article 6 says any and all preventatives or diagnostics or therapeutics must have free, informed and voluntary consent. Now, preventatives would be something like masks. Diagnostics would be something like PCR tests, and therapeutics would be something like these so-called vaccines. So it specifically says they cannot be coerced with things like, you know, blocking people's travel without keeping up with the therapeutics, etc. Another hoop that has to be jumped through, Council of Europe, that oversees the Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, has Resolution 2361 that came in January this year, which specifically goes about coercion, not giving incentives or discrimination against anyone who either does or doesn't want a vaccination. You've also got on the Isle of Man the 2017 Equality Act, which I would imagine would influence anybody that particularly doesn't want a vaccine and doesn't want to lose their job.
Okay, we've only got 2 minutes, Julian.
Yeah, okay. So basically, what are the considerations going on when you've got quite a lot of big legal hurdles that have been adopted around the world, regardless of the fact that they seem to be not particularly in conversation around the world, but these are actually very big laws that are supposed to be safeguards to stop exactly what seems to be going on. Is there any consideration for these, what we've effectively signed up for?
So, in short, I have no plans at this time to introduce mandatory vaccinations for health and care staff. I've said that publicly a number of times. The UK, we're thinking about it. The UK have moved on that themselves. In England, Scotland and Wales haven't done it. Northern Ireland haven't done it. It's not a step that I am considering taking at this point.
Is it anything that would, would something have to happen, something before that were even considered or mooted or enacted?
I think we would have to be in a substantially different place. At the moment, we've got very high voluntary uptake, actually, within health and care services, within health and care staff. I don't see any reason why we would actually be looking to mandate something on people when they're already making that choice themselves and when it isn't really affecting how we operate on the ground at this point. I can't see the argument in favour of it, if I'm honest.
And what's your view of what's happening elsewhere in Europe where mandatory vaccination is being enacted?
My personal view is it should always be a choice, actually. Any medical procedure, I think, should be a personal choice as to whether that is something something you're comfortable with based on the information you've been given. And I think it's our job as government to inform and educate and support people to understand the risks both of having and not having the vaccine, so that we can actually convince people, I think, through informing and education, that, that it is the right thing, not just for them, but for others, and to help protect our health service more broadly.
Okay, all right. Thanks for that, Julian. Just one final question. Can the government make the most sensible decision, says Nicola, close the island to all non-Manx family residents now? Let's enjoy Christmas with our families, and on the 27th, lock us down for 7 days to prevent the same disaster of lockdown on the 7th of January that we had this year. Help the hospital care staff enjoy their Christmas and prevent the January explosion.
So as much as we would like it to, the virus does not respect our holiday periods. And so, no, unfortunately, we can't just wait until Christmas. And I think if we don't do these measures now, we will start seeing increased spikes in advance of Christmas, which would then result in further and probably more stringent mandatory measures coming in. And that's something I want to avoid. It's something the council ministers wants to avoid, which is why we're taking these precautionary steps now, these advisory steps now, and hoping if people do do what we're asking and actually comply with some of these recommendations and requests around mask wearing and lateral flow tests, we won't end up seeing the same kind of spikes we saw the last time around.
Okay, thanks for being with us today. We got through about 5% of the questions of Mr. Hooper, so I'm going to ask you, first of all, have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Will you come back in the new year?
I'm more than happy to come back. I'm always happy to talk about healthcare service. I'm always happy to talk about booster shots and vaccines.
Thanks for being with us today. And thanks to Barry Redfern, producing Man in Line. The podcast will be on in about half an hour's time, and I'll be back tomorrow at noon.